Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast, brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose, McKinney & Evans. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks for joining us this week. On this week's podcast, we'll hear from Katie Moyer from Kentucky Hemp Works about the state of hemp in Kentucky. We'll also hear from Midwest Hemp Council President and Vice President of Bose Public Affairs Group of Council at Bose, McKinney & Evans, Justin Swanson, who will talk about Indiana's 2020 general session regarding some of the bills that passed, some of the bills that didn't pass, and all involving hemp. But first, we'll hear from Katie Moyer, owner of Kentucky Hemp Works. Katie, how you doing today?
I am doing great. It is sunny. It stopped raining. Couldn't ask for more.
Oh, absolutely. It's finally turning the corner here weather-wise in the Midwest. Of course, we've got that black cloud hanging over us of the coronavirus. Let's go ahead and knock that out of the way right now. What kind of problems do you see in Kentucky with this coronavirus related to the hemp industry? Do we have any issues yet? Is there a time where we will have issues if this continues on? How do you see this?
Well, I think we're definitely seeing some issues right off the bat. And there's sort of two angles to this. So one angle is that a lot of stores are being shut down. A lot of small businesses are being shut down. So you can go to a big pharmacy, you know, a big box store or something like that, and you can pick up your hemp products there. But if you have a small mom and pop store that isn't considered essential, then you're not going to be getting your locally grown, you know, good quality, fresh, clean products that way.
And I assume, Katie, in Kentucky, much like Indiana, they do consider the liquor industry to be essential, but not the CBD industry, correct?
Well, I would say probably not the CBD industry. The liquor industry is definitely essential in Kentucky. This is the home of bourbon. And we do, I believe, billions of dollars of exports every year in mm-hmm. the bourbon industry. Mm-hmm. And not to rag on our neighbors in the bourbon industry, but you know, we do think that, you know, hemp is very important as well. But one difference about hemp is that when it comes to the seeds and the food products that are coming out of hemp, those are considered essential. So my company, which processes hemp seeds for food products, is considered a part of the food chain.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So we're still working. We've you know, taken on some additional practices in the shop, in addition to our normal, you know, cleaning and sanitizing and keeping mm-hmm. everything nice and clean. We're going through whatever the CDC wants us to do. We're doing that happily.
And, Katie, go ahead and tell us then, what kind of things are you doing that is different, and how much is that hindering your production? Or I assume it's not helping the production, but what kind of different things are you guys having to do there that you didn't really anticipate?
Well, there's not a huge amount of differences between what the CDC is requiring now and what the FDA always required. So we always had to wear, you know, our hairnets and our gloves and limit, you know, any kind of skin to food product transfers. But the CDC has requested, you know, social distancing of 6 feet between people, you know, limiting the number of people to 10 people or less in the facility. And some of those things are just so easy for us because we're a small business. We only have really at any given time, on a normal day, the maximum number of people that we would have are maybe four. Typically it's two or three. And so that, you know, keeping 6 feet between people and limiting human to human interaction is pretty easy when you're a small business like this, which is why I think that, you know, small businesses really were more more prepared to handle these types of things than some of the bigger businesses like Walmart.
Right. And that works great for a company like yours or a small business like yours. But as you said, unfortunately, the CBD retail outlets and things like that are not able, those folks are not able to go to work. Is that right? In Kentucky?
Right. Now, some of them have been able to do curbside service or delivery at the door. Some of them are, rearranging their storefront so that they have their counter at the right up at the door. So people could open the door and tell the people at the counter what they want. And then the employees would go back and get the products and bring them up to the counter. Other places, as I mentioned, are doing curbside delivery. Some places are shipping products and mailing them. But we're definitely seeing that the smallest of the businesses, the ones that really are most capable of limiting human-to-human interaction, are the ones that are suffering the most.
Well, that's great that they're able to stay open down there. I don't believe they're able to stay open in Indiana. I could be wrong on that, but I believe from some of the things I've seen, some of those retail outlets in Indiana mm-hmm. are not able to operate. So it's great that you guys are down
well,
there.
Well, and we might not be as of 8 p.m. tonight. our governor
changes fast.
It does change fast. And right now, I mean, there's so much confusion as to who can stay open and how they can stay open. So our governor has said that all non-essential businesses have to be closed by 8 p.m. tonight as of Thursday. But at the same time, everybody's kind of trying to run around and figure out, are they essential? How can they be considered essential? How can they keep their doors open without just laying off all their employees? I think that's the big challenge right now is just how to keep people at work, how to keep them getting a paycheck without having to go file for unemployment.
And it's certainly unfortunate for everybody involved in the entire country here. But let's move on to the folks outside planting their seeds. When does the planting season start in Kentucky? Is it much different than the other parts of the Midwest due to the you guys are a little warmer climate down there than Indiana? So does that have any effect on it?
Yeah, we do in some places, depending on the elevation around here.
Okay.
Where I live, I'm on what I call it a mountain. I think some folks in eastern Kentucky would call where I live a big hill. but we do have enough elevation where we're at least a week or two behind some of the places in the southern end of the county. But at the same time, we still typically will plant earlier than some of our northern neighbors. But right now, man, I tell you what, this rain that we've been having, if it doesn't start dry now, it's going to be a while before anybody gets in the fields. Farmers have struggled all winter with getting fields prepared, making sure that everything is ready for springtime because it's so difficult to get out there with all the mud.
Now, Indiana had that problem last year, and it doesn't mm-hmm. look like we have that problem, or it doesn't seem like we're going to have that problem this year. Still early, but did you guys have that problem last year?
We didn't have too bad of a problem last year. I do remember last year, we were getting things in the ground, and meanwhile, I was feeling really bad for our neighbors up in the northern states that were struggling to even get in the fields. So no, we didn't have too much of a problem last year, but also we learned a little bit about some planting practices that are used typically by organic farmers to plant later in the season mm-hmm. after the weeds have sprouted up and then like cut the weeds back and then plant. Mm-hmm. So it's possible that some of our crops might not even go in until June.
Oh wow. Okay. So Katie, let's talk about a couple of other things you're involved here. Now I did not mention early on that you are serve on two boards in Kentucky, the Kentucky Agriculture Development Board, as well as the Kentucky Hemp Advisory Board. With your roles and responsibilities there on those two boards, you're obviously involved in a lot of other facets of the hemp industry. One of the big topics right now, let's stick with Kentucky and say one of the big topics in Kentucky right right now is trying to bring smokable hemp to Kentucky. We do have it in Indiana. You don't have it in Kentucky. How far away are you from getting it? And what kind of obstacles and hurdles are in your way from implementing that?
Well, if you had asked me that a month or two ago, I would have thought that we were pretty close to getting smokable flower here. Between the just jammed up legislation in Frankfurt and then now this coronavirus panic, I think that smokable flower has definitely dropped several notches on any of the legislators' priorities list. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely not in their big, you know, frame of interest right now. But there are definitely some other ways that we could go about it. And we really are looking at every possible angle. You know, how can we get this done quickly and efficiently and without damaging too much of what's going on economically in Kentucky? So there's some options. I mean, obviously, Indiana filed an injunction against their state. And that seems like it was, you know, the quickest, most effective, most simple way to go about it. Mm-hmm. We have tried to do it. You know, we keep saying it. We're trying to be diplomatic about it. You know, it's kind of hard to be nice when you bring somebody a lawsuit. You know, I kept asking, like, how can we file this lawsuit but do it really nicely where we don't make anybody mad? And right. I don't think that's really possible. So we've been, you know, really pushing the diplomatic route. We have some options, though. We could potentially, I mean, hypothetically, our regulations could be changed because the regulations are really what tells us that we can't sell it. We could change the law. Now, the law currently doesn't say that you're not allowed to possess hemp. It says you're not allowed to handle hemp, which by definition in law means a handler is somebody who's moving hemp from one place to another on behalf of a hemp processor or a grower. So, but it doesn't say anything about possession. So it's really all in the regulations. But we think that we could get something in state law that would very specifically say that no regulations will prevent anyone from possessing the flower. So that's the second possible way. The third possibility would be, you know, like I said, the simplest and most effective way of just filing that lawsuit and getting it over with. And then I guess, you know, maybe trying to repair those bridges later.
Katie, are you finding that one of the biggest obstacles there is the law enforcement, the inability to tell the difference between marijuana and hemp? Is that part of the problem down there?
Well, that's what I keep hearing. But I would replace the words law enforcement with the words Kentucky State Police.
Okay.
Because from what we're hearing on the ground here, we've talked to sheriffs, we've talked to chiefs of police, we've talked to rank and file law enforcement officers from one end of the state to the other. And the vast majority, I mean, almost 100% of them are not concerned about hemp. They're not even concerned about marijuana. They're more concerned about the meth that we have going on here, mm-hmm. Especially, you know, it's becoming really big in Western Kentucky, and we hate that. But, you know, they're concerned about the opiates. They're concerned about the heroin. But they're really not that concerned with smokable flower. And I mean, I even heard from a sheriff who said that he didn't understand why people kept saying law enforcement was against it because he didn't see anything wrong with it. Hmm. And so, you know, it really comes down to politics. There's a few people up at the top, the top levels of the state police who are, you know, that's where politics happens. It happens in Frankfurt. It doesn't happen out here at the various state police posts or that kind of thing.
Sure.
You know, that kind of politics is what is making our farmers suffer here in Kentucky.
And once again, we're speaking with Katie Moyer, owner of Kentucky Hemp Works, getting some great information about from our friends to the south here of Indiana. And Katie, now that's your local fight there. Another fight that kind of looming right now, the 1% movement. And this is to get testing instead of the 0.3% of THC in a plant. You want to get that raised to 1%. You and a lot of other people across the country. Explain that movement to us and tell us where that stands right now. And is this coronavirus kind of putting a halt on all that possible progress in that aspect?
Well, I am definitely a big fan of this 1% movement. I think it's a fantastic way to help, a huge number of the farmers who have tested above 0.3%. I would estimate probably 95% of the people who are above the 0.3% limit are also below 1%. So there's this, little segment of the hemp farming population that has a product that would never be considered worthy of a street drug. And they can't sell it. They can't do anything with it. They're having to destroy it. It's sad. It's heartbreaking. These guys put a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of energy into growing these crops. And then to come out at 0.4% THC and have to destroy your livelihood is absolutely heartbreaking. So there is a big movement to raise that THC limit to 1%. And we've seen it from the very top of the grassroots activists to the true grassroots. We've got, our farmers on the ground, people on the ground here that are going to their county judge executives and asking the counties to pass resolutions in support of 1%. And so we've had several counties here in Kentucky that have actually passed resolutions. Those resolutions are asking our federal delegation or our U.S. Congress to pass a federal bill raising the THC limit for the entire country, not just Kentucky, to 1%. So
because wouldn't it have to be the entire country?
Yeah, it would, based on how some of the state laws are written. So our state law is written that whatever the feds decide to do, that's what we're going to do. So it's kind of got language in there that it's a little bit, I would say, fluid. Mm-hmm. So if the feds pass something that changes it to 1%, then our laws automatically take that into account, and that's what it would be. I don't know if all the other states have that, but we do think that if we change it federally to 1%, even if a state has to go back and amend that law just to change it to 1%, it would be a heck of a lot easier for them to do that than it would be for them to change it to 1% before the feds.
Well, because I'm looking at it from the point of view of if Kentucky is at 1% and Indiana is 0.3%, but you're selling it nationwide or internationally, wouldn't that cause a problem, or wouldn't there be issues there?
Yeah, it definitely would. Legally, if you're selling a 1% product in a 0.3% state, that would definitely cause problems.
Right. So if you kept it in Kentucky, then it's no problem state to state. Mm-hmm. But course, we would prefer the national government to take care of this. And does anybody really know where the 0.3% came from originally? Who came up with that, or how they came up with that idea?
Well, there's a few different sort of theories on where it originally came from. I was under the impression that it was it kind of originated in Europe, and it was different countries that had competing hemp industries. So when Europe, or I don't know if it was the United Nations or what, but when they came up with their standards, one guy had crops that were 0.3 and below, but his competition didn't. So lobby hard enough and spend enough money, and you can get the legislators to write it however you want. But I believe it's the World Health Organization. I'll have to look it up. But there is a document that actually talks about that the 0.3% was arbitrary. Mm-hmm. And it really was just just a number that was picked. There's not really any rhyme or reason to it, because if you think about it, you know, even a 1% or 2% hemp plant does not have any drug value. The medical marijuana states are selling cannabis right now that's 25% THC and higher. And if you come up to somebody and say, hey, I got this 1% hemp over here, you want to get in on this? They're going to laugh you out of the building.
Mm-hmm. Well, and let's take that one step further. The plants are tested while they are live and in the ground. There is some discussion out there about the THC level being tested after the plant is already processed, or testing the finished product. So is there a difference between the plant being live and when it's cut? Does it deteriorate in that percentage? And is there a difference there? And can you explain that to us?
Yeah, so the plant will definitely start to sort of oxidize over time. So it's, you know, as it's drying out and as it's being stored in storage, those trichomes and cannabinoids will definitely deteriorate. But one possibility would be to take all of the hemp grown and you know, have it all processed and extracted, where it's much easier to store. Then, you know, you can dispose of your plant material, you can keep your extracts. And then, you know, like you mentioned, there's this growing movement to test the finished products for 0.3% instead of the plants. So if we took all of the hemp that was grown, all everything, you know, even if it's 0.3%, even if it's 0.5%, if we just took all of that and we processed everything and then manufactured that extract into products, tested them as finished products, made sure they were below 0.3% at that point, then we have a bunch of very happy farmers, a bunch of processors who are happy because they're making product and manufacturing and selling it. And the public is still getting products that are less than 0.3% THC.
Well, it makes a lot of sense. Is that something that you're pushing for, or where is that right now?
Absolutely. There isn't as much of a push for that, because I would say that a lot of attention has been placed on just raising the THC limit to 1%. The Farm Bureau, I mean, the National Farm Bureau organization has come on board with 1%, and all over the country, people are pushing 1%, and that's great for sure. But I do think that in the long term, really the sort of free market approach to the problem that we have is testing those finished products. And even if the finished products have to be less than 1%, I'd be fine with that. But, you know, testing the products and putting the responsibility on the processors and the manufacturers instead of on the farmers, that would go a huge way in helping our farm community in this industry.
Well, you hit on it earlier when you talked about the fact that the coronavirus right now is taking up all of the time and the interest of lawmakers. Now with the 1% movement, that certainly will stall that for a while, I would assume.
Yes, unfortunately, we've definitely seen that, it actually has happened. So we were in discussions with federal legislators about how could we change this? Could we get either one of those angles, the 1% or testing finished products? And both of those angles were under discussion. And right now, the only discussion is coronavirus. So it's disappointing. It's a tough time in the industry to have something like this come up. So, you know, we had all of our attention on improving things for our farm communities and for our small businesses. And then all of a sudden, the Rona happened. And here we are just talking only about that.
And Katie, I know you've taken the opportunity with the kids being out of school to start a hemp homeschooling program or something like that. Tell us about that.
Well, one other thing that we are doing with this whole shutdown and everybody being forced to stay at home and all the kids being forced to stay at home from school, we've started on our Facebook page, Hemp Homeschool. And basically, it's short video lessons where we talk about just the very basics of hemp anatomy, the different parts of the plant. And then we include homework assignments that can either just be very simple, or they can send you down hours and hours and hours worth of rabbit holes if you're looking to do more hemp research or just want to learn more. I'm getting ready to do another hemp homeschool. We're doing them Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at noon central every week. Next week is the last one on our syllabus, but it's going so well that I think we're going to keep doing it for a while. We might keep it around forever for all we know.
Yeah, that's a great idea. That is really neat and fascinating. And again, we will list that on the Midwest Hemp Council website. But where will people go to find that if they don't get to our website?
They can check out the live videos on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/kyhempworks. And they also will be archived on our YouTube channel, and they should have the links to all the homework assignments as well.
Well, fantastic. We'll certainly be looking forward to that. I'll have to check that out. Maybe I can learn something.
That sounds great.
Once again, Katie Moyer, owner of Kentucky Hemp Works. Katie, always a great conversation. Always great to have you on here and find out what's going on down there. Is there anything else happening in Kentucky that we need to hit on?
Well, I would say, you know, I usually try to, and anytime I get on an interview or have an opportunity where people might listen to me for a few minutes, I usually try to have some kind of action item. And since we don't have an action item right now as far as hemp legislation, I would just say figure out ways to support those small businesses in your own community that are struggling right now. I'm looking for ways, whether it's, you know, picking up gift cards that I can use after the Rona is over, or, you know, maybe fundraising, like anything that you can do to help those small businesses that's doors are closed right now. They still have their bills to pay. Those bills didn't go away just because of the virus. And so I just, you know, encourage everybody, find ways to help those small businesses in your own community. If we all chip in a little bit, it'll make it a little bit easier for them.
All right. Once again, Katie Moyer. Katie, thanks so much. We hope things dry out there in Kentucky.
Thank you.
You guys get those seeds in the ground and have a great hemp season.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure.
Okay, as we continue on, we have Justin Swanson, Midwest Hemp Council President. Justin is also the Vice President of Bose Public Affairs Group of Council at Bose, McKinney, and Evans. But as you can hear in the background, Justin, like the rest of us, not at work today, but still working, got the kids at home, everything. Kind of adds a whole different flair to working, doesn't it, with the kids in the background? They don't quite understand the whole delegation of time.
Yeah, I think everyone understands most people need some grace right now all around. So I think I think we'll make it through.
There we go. And not a problem. We certainly will. So, Justin, again, thanks for taking the time here to be with us. When we get Justin on the program, usually we're talking politics, things that deal with hemp and legislation. We're going to talk about the 2020 session of the Indiana General Assembly. Justin, what's going on with that? I know the session has ended. Where are we at? What came out of that session?
Yeah, so the legislators concluded their business for the 2020 session March 11th / early in the morning on March 12th. So they're officially done for this year. And the next 2021 legislative session will be a budget year. So we'll run through the end of April, and that's really the only bill they need to pass that year is the state's biennial budget.
And what does that mean for the hemp community?
It might be an opportunity to start having a discussion on properly funding a regulatory body for the hemp industry here in Indiana. Anytime you talk about policy and it has a fiscal impact to the state and it's not a budget year, you're kind of dead on arrival. So it's really more about the proper time and venue to have those discussions this summer and leading up to next session.
Well, talk about some of the bills that were passed.
So we had we had 902 total bills filed this year. And of those 902 bills, only 168 of them became law. That equates to about a 19% passage rate. So I tell you that to you and the listeners, just to give you a perspective on, you know, it's not necessarily the easiest thing to do to pass new laws. And so I did a search here, and we had about 17 pieces of legislation that impacted the hemp industry in varying degrees this year. Mm-hmm. And of those 17 bills, two of them ended up passing. So we have two bills that impact our industry here, both in Indiana, and also one of them actually impacts out-of-state companies, small businesses and farmers traveling, putting certain hemp products into transit through Indiana, destined for another state.
And what was the other, the first bill that was passed then?
The first one, so yeah, I'll get into a little more detail here. Senate Old Act 1, just so everybody knows, the lower the bill number means the higher priority for the majority caucus. Mm-hmm. So for instance, Senate Rule Act 1, it was the Senate Republicans' number one basically legislative initiative this year.
Okay.
And they were really focused on reducing the number of smokers here in Indiana, trying to respond to kind of this juuling epidemic we have in Indiana, and also increasing, they're looking at increasing the age to buy tobacco, e-liquids, and other vaping products to 21. Right now it's 18.
Mm-hmm.
So that bill did become law, and it's some people might be asking why we're talking about vaping and nicotine products when we're, you know, a hemp industry. Right now, actually, under the Indiana's definition of what is an e-liquid, the CBD vaping products actually meets that definition. Whether that's intended or not, I don't know. But now officially you have to be 21 years old to possess CBD products, and also retailers are prohibited from selling CBD vaping products to anyone who is under 21 years of age.
Now, of course, we all know the difference between cigarettes and hemp. Cigarettes having tar, nicotine, all kinds of addictive additives and things like that. But they're basically just going to lump that in with hemp that does not have any of those products. And the only thing that is in common would be the way you ingest it into your body.
Yeah. So it is just really only a different delivery method. And this is really a result, I think, of there's an industry out there that, you know, sells e-liquids that have no nicotine in them whatsoever, and it's just flavoring. So that's really where that law comes from. I think it's designed to curb the number of young smokers coming online. Mm-hmm. And I think kind of the recent trend you've seen is the younger consumers of nicotine are choosing the vaping products over traditional cigarettes. So yeah, I guess to answer your question, Jason, it does kind of stink that we're lumped in with basically with the tobacco industry. But right now, I think that there's just so much focus on reducing that any kind of opportunity for a younger smoker to come online. I think the legislature is going to take that.
Yeah, there's probably not going to be too much pushback on something like that. Are they going to try in the future to extract hemp from that bill and make it different, or are we all in agreement that it is basically the same thing?
I think there's going to be a time and a place for that, but certainly in terms of priorities, kind of I guess for the Midwest Hemp Council, it's not a huge priority right now. You know, we need to get someone actually regulating our industry here in Indiana first before I think we can start trying to identify some more nuanced laws and statute that may or may not need to be tweaked.
All right, and you said there were 17 bills, two of those passed. We've discussed one. What was the second one that was hemp related?
So the second one, Senate Rule Act 335, and this modifies or amends Indiana's dealing in smokable hemp statute that was passed last year. Which, you know, it's good for out-of-state farmers and out-of-state small businesses who are transporting smokable hemp through Indiana, destined for another state,
mm-hmm.
Because it creates a defense for them, for those people. As long as it's the product's in continuous transit through Indiana, they're covered. You know, I have a lot of questions on how enforceable this is, and I think it provides an opportunity for folks who are cutting corners to cut corners,
mm-hmm.
rather than giving, you know, the industry clear guidelines on how to operate. outside of an outright ban. So that one's a little frustrating because it helps out-of-state businesses and farmers, but doesn't do anything for Hoosier small businesses and farmers.
Who would have been pushing that bill? What type of person who would have wanted that to pass, as opposed to those who maybe did not think it should have passed?
So it was kind of hard to track down, but you know, I think this is really coming maybe from the law enforcement side, trying to shore up some of their concerns. You know, and it remains to be seen in how this impacts the current litigation pending in the Seventh Circuit. So that's some stuff we'll be digging into in the next couple of months and updating our members as soon as we have a clear answer.
Okay. And you said there were 15 other bills that did have some effect on the hemp industry that did not pass. Were any of those bills that we needed passed and that we're going to work to pass next year? Or tell us a little bit about those.
One of them, which we our members fought back pretty hard on, was would have banned putting CBD into food. Mm-hmm. So we were, you know, our message there was let's wait for actual guidance from the FDA on how to properly do that.
And we're not talking just about human food. We're talking about animal food, animal feed, things like that as well. Is that correct? Or is this only for people?
Yeah, this would have just been for specifically food and drinks.
Okay.
And so that's kind of a... definitely an area, especially for newer restaurants and chefs here in Indianapolis are particularly interested in experimenting with putting on their menus.
Well, I know we both have been to a couple different restaurants at the same time that had hemp related items on their menu. So hopefully they're able to keep that going.
Yeah, they will. So the bill did not pass, but just trying to show our listeners kind of the spectrum of viewpoints we have at the State House.
So somebody literally wrote a bill not saying that we can allow hemp in food, but saying, hey, we don't want to allow hemp in food. Who did that and why would they have done that? What purpose would they have had to say that? Under what grounds, you know, why would they have put that in there?
Well, so keep in mind, the outward facing stance of the FDA right now is it is illegal to add CBD into food and drink products and basically put them into interstate commerce. Mm-hmm. So the legislators, Senator Houchin, I believe, was basically trying to codify in Indiana law that stance from the FDA, which I think you and I and our listeners know is certainly going to change. Mm-hmm. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to make sure we left that option open because I'm pretty confident the FDA is going to find a way to keep this industry going moving forward.
Okay.
Through reasonable regulations. So our message was, let's just wait. Let's see what the federal government does and we can kind of develop a game plan after that. So that's kind of our message on that.
So you do feel that the FDA is hemp friendly and not looking at it like, oh, we've just got to deal with this now. I mean, are they a friend of the hemp industry?
I wouldn't call them a friend because I think anyone, you know, the federal government with how slow moving they are typically is really never a friend to any kind of business enterprise. You know, but the new commissioner came out and said, you know, it'd be basically a fool's errand to come out and try to ban this stuff.
Right, right.
So they've gave clear indication that they are trying to work on developing frameworks for what they're referring to as over-the-counter CBD products.
All right. Any other bills that you mentioned there?
Yeah, the last one's really, really interesting, and I think it's a really big deal that didn't really get a whole lot of attention, the attention it should have gotten this session, and that was Senate Bill 236. And what that bill did is it established a defense to operating a vehicle with a controlled substance in your body.
Okay.
If the only controlled substance is THC. Okay. So what this does is, one, it would have protected consumers here in Indiana who are consuming CBD products. It protects them from essentially, you know, misdemeanor or felony criminal liability if they were to be involved in an accident and get a blood draw and they have THC in their system, but they're not using marijuana, they're using illegal CBD products. So
how do they tell the difference?
Well, you can't.
Okay. So if you do have THC, if you're smoking marijuana and not hemp, basically you're still okay because they don't know whether it's hemp or marijuana.
So, yeah, and that's the other aspect of it, Jason, is I think this is a recognition from Indiana lawmakers that we're going to have Hoosiers crossing the borders, going over, consuming cannabis products, and maybe even it's 5 days later or a week later and they get in an accident. Mm-hmm. right? And then you're exposed to misdemeanor and felony liability depending on the severity of the accident and the injuries.
Because in general, it does, THC stays in your system for 20, 30 days, something like that.
That's exactly right. And so to me, this is probably the biggest bill and the biggest discussion that Indiana has had on cannabis, in a very long time, as long as I've been there. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to bring that to everyone's attention. I think that's something that'll come back again next year that we're going to certainly support and try to improve if it needs improved.
Let's move on, though, Justin. Talk about the Indiana licensing with hemp here for 2020.
So we do have to remind everybody there's no deadline for the applications this year.
Okay.
But there is a 300 licenses cap.
Mm-hmm.
And as of March 18th, we were at 196 out of the 300. So we have about 104 more to go. It could be less by now.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the state chemist and the seed commissioner are working really hard, especially given kind of the disruption globally on what's going on with the COVID-19 stuff. But they are still processing them. But I would definitely encourage you, if you're listening and haven't done that, I'd get that in sooner rather than later.
Oh, absolutely. And we did speak with Don Robinson last week, and he said they were still hard at work. But of course, a week is an eternity here this past, I don't know, I guess you could say month. It feels like the last week's been a month. So you never know from day to day who's able to actually go to work, who's not able to go to work. But without mm-hmm. question, now's the time to get that application in if you want to grow this year.
That's right.
All right. Talk about the Indiana State Plan update.
So if everybody will remember, our plan got rejected by USDA for a handful of different reasons. Their vast majority of them are pretty simple fixes. But again, this COVID-19 pandemic, I think, has set everything back and forced everybody to reprioritize.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still working try to get that fixed and get that back in. So we have some clear guidance on what farmers and other processes are going to be operating under for the 2020 season.
And how has the coronavirus impacted the hemp litigation that you've got going on right now?
So unfortunately, we're now only going to have essentially a conference call in place of in-person oral arguments. So that was a little disappointing because I was looking forward to getting up to Chicago, and I'd never been up to the Seventh Circuit before. So that would have been pretty interesting for a number of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that conference call, which is basically our oral arguments now, is still scheduled for April 14th as of today.
And Justin, give us a little background on this hemp litigation that is going on, exactly what we're talking about.
So this this is a result of a bill, Senate Rolled Act 516, from last Indiana legislative session that redefined hemp and criminalized the flower of the hemp plant,
mm-hmm.
which happens to be the most valuable part of the plant, mm-hmm. For farmers and consumers, frankly. There's a group of retailers and distributors that approached us and wanted to challenge that on constitutional grounds. And so we filed in federal court and were awarded an emergency injunction.
Mm-hmm.
And so the state appealed that. And so we are now up in the Seventh Circuit, hoping for a clear order in the next couple months.
And then again, how has the coronavirus that's halted that at the moment? What do you foresee happening in the future, and when do you anticipate the possibility of getting back to where you can argue that?
Well, I'm hoping that the conference call is the biggest disruption we'll have so far, but I'll definitely update everybody if that changes.
All right, fantastic. Once again, Justin Swanson, Midwest Hemp Council President. Justin's also the Vice President of Bose Public Affairs Group of Council at Bose, McKinney, and Evans. I've been saying that for over a year now. It just slides right off the tongue. Love saying it, Justin. But anything else that we need to hit on that I don't have in my notes here?
Yes, and then Jamie would yell at me if I didn't plug this.
I got the email and I forgot about it as well. Go ahead and plug this for us.
So we're going to be partnering with one of our members on doing a couple webinars every Wednesday. So be on the lookout for our website and some email blasts on that.
That's going to be a neat process.
Yeah, and we'll have some really, really quality content for people who are seriously considering entering the space, whether it's selecting the genetics or the growing of it, the drying of it. I mean, all that kind of stuff is going to be covered each week. So I really encourage our listeners to check it out and really excited about it.
All right, Justin, thanks again, sir, and talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, Jason.
All right, and that's going to do it for our show this week. Thanks for listening to the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast, brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose, McKinney, and Evans. You can find more information about the Midwest Hemp Council, as well as our entire catalog of podcasts, on our website, MidwestHempCouncil.com. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more. So long, everybody.